that chapter was a transition between the former preaching of Ezekiel, which was a message of doom. The nation was doomed, Jerusalem would be destroyed, the people would be brought into captivity. Then he followed that with the destruction of the heathen nations round about. All of those would be brought to naught. And our lesson, and that's what he pointed out last time then, that now he looked to the future, and the people were ready to listen to him. Jerusalem had fallen, and the stragglers were being brought in by Nebuchadnezzar back to Babylon. And now then he's going to encourage them for the future. They were very despondent over the destruction of Jerusalem. You can imagine that. All of their friends and loved ones at home had been killed, and others were being crossing the desert, coming in captivity to Babylon. Now then, it's Ezekiel's job now to encourage the brethren, to encourage the folks there, to build them up and then have them look now not to the past, but now let's look to the future. Right? And so, and in our chapter today, before he gets to some of the things that are the most hopeful, and it is the rest of the book, the book of hope, he now deals with the shepherds, that is, the kings of Judah and Israel. The kings had failed. Now, before I look at the chapter, I would like to turn to 1 Samuel 8 and notice what God said the kings would do, because Ezekiel is not dealing with any one particular king. He's dealing with a failure of the kings of the kingdom. And now I'm going to turn to Jeremiah 23 for a thought there. Turn first with me to 1 Samuel, the 8th chapter, when the people came to Samuel and told him that his sons were getting old and they wanted a king to reign over them. Samuel tried to discourage them in that, but God told him in verse about 7, "For they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not be king over them." So when they asked for a king, back in the days of Samuel, the last prophet judge that they had been appointed Saul, they came to him for a king. Now he warned them of what to look for. Drop down to verse 10. Samuel told all the words of Jehovah unto the people that asked of him a king. And he said, "This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them unto him for his chariots and to his horsemen, and they shall run before his chariots, and he will appoint them unto him for captains of thousands and captains of fifties, and he will set some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and the instruments of the chariots. And he will take your daughters to be perfumers and to be cooks and to be bakers, and he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards even to his servants. And he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and his servants. And he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your flocks and he shall be your, and you shall be his servants. And you shall cry out in that day because of your king whom you shall have chosen you. Jehovah will not answer you in that day." But the people refused to listen to Samuel. They said, "Nay, that we will have a king over us, that we may be like the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." Well, they thought that to appoint a king would solve all the problems. But as you study the history of Kings and Chronicles, you learn there that these kings, even David, put many of the people into forced labor. And they forced them to do certain things. And so what God said back there through Samuel had now come to pass. The kings had led the people astray. They had misruled them. They had taken the stuff for themselves. They had done all of that. Now then they were being brought into captivity. And that was partially the result of the failure of those kings. Now turn to Jeremiah 23 and notice what Jeremiah said, which is about the same thing as we're going to read in just a moment. 23 Jeremiah chapters 1 through 7 and 8. "Woe unto the shepherds that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith Jehovah. Therefore thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, against the shepherds that feed my people," and that would be the kings, "you have scattered my flock and driven them away," that is the people of God. It's almighty people as a flock, and these kings as shepherds, "and have scattered them, and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doings, saith Jehovah. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries whither I have driven them, and will bring them again to their fold, and they shall be fruitful and multiply. And I will set up shepherds over them, who shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed, neither shall any be lacking, saith Jehovah. Now notice he moves on from what he's going to do in bringing them back from captivity to the coming of the Messiah. Behold, the day is come, saith Jehovah, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and he shall reign as king, and deal wisely, and shall execute justice and righteousness in the land. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name whereby he shall be called, Jehovah, our righteousness. Now there's a prophecy that in Jeremiah. Jeremiah was contemporary with Ezekiel, except just a few years earlier, but they were in that same time frame. But at any rate, Jeremiah prophesies here of the failure of the kings and what's going to happen, but he looks also to the David that would come. Now, of course, Jesus is a descendant of David, and just as I'm a descendant of the Haley's backyard, and I'm a Haley, why, so Christ was a David. He was a descendant of David, and that's, and God speaks of that both in Jeremiah and in Ezekiel, of this Messiah that was to come to Christ as the David that would come. Now turn to the 34th chapter, and with that before us, we'll look now at what he says here. So this is against the rulers here, from Saul on down. You're not dealing with just one particular. You're dealing with the whole group of kings that they had. Now they had a few good ones in Judah. Israel for 200 years never had a good king. They were all idolaters. But in Judah you have a few good ones, like Amaziah and Jotham and Hezekiah and Josiah, to name four of them. But there were about four or five good kings. David, of course, was a good king. But even David had his faults. David had a lot of faults. We think about the good things, and that's fine. But David had some real faults in his life as well. He almost lost his faith. Now, you remember last year when we were studying the Samuels before we dismissed midweek service. While we dealt with David, and he almost lost his faith after a while. At least he wasn't faithful to God as he should have been. But he came back. And then you remember a relation with Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite. He forced some of the people into forced labor also. He was a total failure as a father. He was a good warrior, in many ways a good king, but he was a failure as a father, and in some other ways there. So when then was he a man after God's own heart? In his always turning to God, repenting of what he had done, seeking the favor of God, praising God, looking to God, his weaknesses were weaknesses of the flesh. They were weaknesses that grew out of the weakness of flesh. So we pointed out last year when we were studying those kings and Samuel, you have a weakness here toward God of rebellion against God. In David, you have the weakness of the flesh. In Solomon, you have the weakness of pride. And Solomon, in his pride, built up this great harem and this great empire, but he allowed altars to be built to the gods of these wives. So he turned to idolatry in a way there. So all three of them had their weaknesses. And in that, I pointed out, you remember, that these characterized the weaknesses of man. Of men in general, rebellion against God when one follows his own way, weakness of the flesh, or pride, as demonstrated in Solomon. Now, with that before us, we now read Ezekiel, God through Ezekiel, as he condemns these shepherds, kings, after that failure. Now, note, and the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say unto them, even to the shepherds, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, woe unto the shepherds of Israel, that do feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, and you clothe you with the wool. You kill the fatlings, and you feed not the sheep. Now that's using, you remember, quote Ezekiel. There is a strong for these allegories, and for illustrations, and for whatever you want to call them here, by which it illustrates and teaches the lessons. So here he's using the shepherds. The kings as shepherds, people as sheep, and the kings as feeding on the people and robbing them, taking from them, rather than doing what they should have been doing. Now, in these next few verses, notice. Now, he has five charges here. As I read this, I was thinking about what the responsibility of a ruler is. Sometimes you wonder, I know we need a king or a president or something like that. We need something like that. I would say, wouldn't it be wonderful if we'd all lived in such a way that we'd get rid of all those fellows? It'd be the best thing that could happen to us, I think, sometimes. For in many ways, become a great investment to a nation in their own blessing. So often that's true, leading us in the wrong direction. And yet, we must have some legal system of some kind. He said last Sunday morning, God ordained it for the punishment of the wicked and the protection and the good of the righteous. So as long as men are like God, we'll need that. But too often, the rulers become like the people that they're supposed to put down and to put in jail there. Too often, that's true. Well, let me move on. Now, I know here are five things. The diseased have you not strengthened. That's first. Neither, second, neither have you healed that which was sick. Third, neither have you bound up that which was broken. Fourth, neither have you brought back that which was, or that which was driven away. Fifth, neither have ye sought that which was lost. Now there are five charges against these kings which indicate, now not that they're to go out and minister to a sick person, not that at all, but using this illustration here of sheep that have a broken leg or sick and other things there that the shepherd is to attend to. Here have been the affairs of state that the king should have been looking after, and he wasn't. I think our government has been too concerned with foreign affairs and foreign governments and not enough with keeping at home. And that was God's criticism of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Habakkuk, when he said, he keepeth not at home. That is, our trying to conquer the world and run the world instead of staying at home and looking after that for which he was appointed. And I think our rulers, our president and his staff and Congress and government all could learn a great deal about how to govern if they just read the Bible. They just had a good course in the prophets and then come on over a good course in the New Testament. Paying attention to it, they make pretty good rulers. When they don't know a thing about God nor his way, why, they go their own way, guess it's all into trouble. That's one of my problems. Now here, but, now over against that, here's what you don't do. But with force and with rigor have you ruled over them. You've exercised your force over the people rather than doing what you were put in there to do, don't you see? Right? Good criticism. And they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And they became food to all the beasts of the field. That would be the foreign people and foreign elements that would seek to destroy them. They became victims of them and were scattered. Not my sheep. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill. Yea, my sheep were scattered upon all the face of the earth, and there was none that did search and seek after them. For God looks now upon these people that were his people, calling his sheep, my sheep. You know, I noticed as I was studying this lesson, how often that word my sheep occurred. So I went through and counted all the times here, and God used that word my sheep here as is. I don't know whether anything to this or not. He used that 12 times when it was speaking here of Israel. Then as you come to the close of it, here he used this expression my sheep one time as it pertained to the new, that is, under Christ. There's the new Israel over here. Now, was that accidental or was that on purpose? There were 12 tribes, and 12 times he speaks of my sheep, referring to Israel there. And over here, under the new, which is just one body, one kingdom, he uses my sheep just one time. That was interesting to me. I'm not saying that was on purpose or that there's anything about it, but it was interesting to me to note that. So I went through and encircled every time he used my sheep, and 12 times it referred to Israel, one time to the new order. It's at least interesting, isn't it? At least interesting. All right, now let's notice that as we go along. So now then, moving on down here, we just read that to verse 6 here, and twice that. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Jehovah. As I live, saith the Lord Jehovah, surely, forasmuch as my sheep became a prey, and my sheep became food to all the beasts of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherds search for my sheep, but the shepherds fed themselves and fed not my sheep. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Jehovah. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will require my sheep at thy hand. Now, in that sense, you did not look after them, I'll require them at your hand. Now, that's also true of, in the New Testament, the shepherds of the New Testament are the elders, the overseers. Well, in Hebrews 13, verse about 17 or 18 along there, when it says, obey them that have the rule over you and submit to them, for they watch on behalf of your souls, as they that shall give account, that they may do this with joy and not with grief, for this were unprofitable for you. So you see, and so the shepherd, God requires the individual, if he warns him, all right. We had that last in the 33rd chapter. If he warns them, all right. If he doesn't warn them, I require them at your hand. All right? Now then, I think that same thing is true in the church today of elders. Elders of the shepherds. Now, not kings, but elders. Elders of the shepherds, as you ever learned there from Hebrews there, I mean, from 1 Peter 5 and also in Acts and other places there, where God speaks of the elders as shepherds of his sheep, of the flock. Right? Now, unless they warn the individual who's going astray, God said, I require their blood at your hand. So what God required of the shepherds back yonder, you see, something of a parallel of what he requires of the elders of the church who are the shepherds of the flock of God today. It's a serious thing to be a king or a president or even an elder of the church of the Lord. It's a serious thing when an individual has a responsibility over and for other people, whether it be in a political kingdom or whether it be in the spiritual family of God. It's a terrifically serious matter. And I don't think that either preachers or presidents take their work from that viewpoint seriously enough as a relationship to God. All right, now then. And at their hand and cause them to cease from feeding the sheep, neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more, and I will deliver my sheep from their mouth, that they may not be food for them. Now here then God's condemnation of the shepherds. Now I'm going to take them away from him. I'm going to bring this kingship to an end, this kingdom to an end. Now you have in Amos the 9th chapter, in Hosea the 1st chapter, God says he's going to bring the northern kingdom to an end. We'll bring that to an end in Hosea 1 and verse 4 and Amos 9, and I think it's about verses 8 and 9. God's going to destroy the sinful kingdom. Then in Jeremiah the 22nd chapter and Ezekiel, I believe, was the 26th chapter, God says he's going to bring with Konah, the last divinely appointed king of Judah, with his death, God would bring that kingdom to an end. So God would bring both kingdoms, the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. He would bring them to an end, no more. Well, that's back in Jeremiah 22, no more. The one of Konah's descendants reign upon the throne of David. Now notice what he says here in Jeremiah 22 and verse 29. O earth, 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 hear the word of Jehovah. Thus saith Jehovah, write ye this man childless, a man that shall know not prosper in his days, for no more shall a man of his seed prosper, sitting upon the throne of David and ruling in Judah. So with Konah, God brought to an end the rule of the descendants of David by his appointment. Now Zedekiah was made king for 11 years, but he was a puppet king set up by Nebuchadnezzar and not by Jehovah. With Konah, the reign of David really came to an end. God said, never again will one sit on the throne and prosper. Right? Now look over here at Ezekiel, 21st chapter, maybe it is. 21st chapter. Yeah, 21st chapter, verse 25. Now here he's talking about Zedekiah now. And thou, O deadly, wounded, wicked woman, the prince of Israel, whose day is come, time of the iniquity of the end. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, remove the mitre, take off the crown, there shall be no more the same. Exalt that which is low, and abase that which is high. I will overturn it. This also shall be no more, until he come whose right it is, and I will give it him. Now who was this to come whose right it is? That was the Messiah, that was the Christ. So there would never be another king of the descendant of David on the throne of David that was brought to an end under Christ's king, and he was raised up on the throne of David to rule in God's stead over the people of God, and still ruled and always will. So you see, both kingdoms would be brought to an end. No more would a seed of David rule on the throne. Now then, a lady asked me last week there about the Jews there, and they're continuing. No, Jeremiah said in the 30th chapter, verse 11, I'll bring all the king nation to an end, whither I scattered thee, but I will not make a full end of thee. Now I want you to get these two points. The kingdom would never again be established. So what's going on over in Israel right now is that the little political kingdom that they've set up has not a thing in the world to do with the old kingdom that God destroyed. The kingdom would never again be established. Second, the Jew would never be brought to a full end. As a people, they will always exist, God said in Jeremiah. But as a kingdom, they will never again exist. Those two things have stood now for 1900 years. With the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D., the genealogical tables were destroyed. Not a Jew on earth today can tell you whether he's a descendant of Levi or Judah or what he was. So without a descendant of Judah on the throne and a descendant of Levi officiating in the temple, you don't have what God brought done in. Follow that? Right. So that'll never again be. But the Jew, from that time on, he still exists as a definite ethnic group wherever they may be. So the Jew stands as a monument to the fact that God spoke back yonder. The fact that the kingdom has never again been established is a monument to the fact that God spoke. We've got two very positive arguments there, that God spake in Jeremiah and in Ezekiel. Well, both came to pass. Still are. Still are coming to pass. Still are that. Well, all right. We'll move on from that then. Now in verse 11, for thus saith the Lord Jehovah, behold, I myself, even I, will search for my sheep, and I will seek them out. Now, this is a prophecy now of bringing back of the remnant from the captivity back to Judea. God's going to bring them back. But God said, I'll be there, King. I'll be there over them. Now, notice, I will search my sheep and will seek them out, as a shepherd seeketh out his flock in the day that he is among his sheep that are scattered abroad. So will I seek out my sheep, and I will deliver them out of all places, whether they have been scattered in the cloudy and dark day. Now, the cloudy day was a day of judgment. You have that in Isaiah, you have it in Ezekiel, we had it earlier in Ezekiel, 29 chapter, we read some of that there. Now, the dark and cloudy day, right? And God would come against Egypt, Isaiah 19:1, Jehovah cometh upon Egypt, riding upon a swift cloud. A swift cloud, the cloud of judgment. So when you read in Matthew 24, where Jesus said, you see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven, he's not speaking there of his second coming. He is speaking of his coming on the clouds of judgment with the Roman armies as the instruments of his judgment in destroying Jerusalem, destroying it and scattering the people. So you have to understand the prophets to understand Matthew 24. One reason why a lot of people got mixed up on that. We move on. And I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and will bring them into their own land. And I will notice now God's going to bring their own land, and I will feed them upon the mountains of Israel, by the watercourses, and all the inhabited places of the country. I will feed them with good pasture, and upon the mountains of the height of Israel shall their fold be. Now the fold is a place of protection. You build a fold and bring the sheep in at night. You remember Jesus said, the sheep I have which are out of this fold. That is, we're brought into this particular place of protection there in the 10th chapter of John. There shall they lie down in a good fold, and on that pasture shall they feed upon the mountains of Israel. I myself, now read this pattern, I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I will cause them to lie down, saith the Lord Jehovah. I will seek that which was lost, and will bring back that which was driven away, and will bind up that which was broken, and will strengthen that which was sick, but the fat and the strong I will destroy. I will feed them in justice. Now that's a very important point. Now that's talking about the bringing of them back from captivity. God said, I'll bring them back. I'm going to say a little bit later here, and I myself will be the shepherd, and I'll be their shepherd. So they asked for a king and rejected God. Now God's rejecting their kings, and he himself will be their king when he brings them back. They won't have another king. We've already pointed that out in both Ezekiel and Jeremiah. They won't ever have another king of David on the throne until he comes whose light it is. And that would be Jehovah, who would be called Jehovah our righteousness, according to Jeremiah. And well, they're very interesting, isn't it? At least I think it is. It's wonderful. Now notice, brother, and I'll feed them. Now as for you, now he returns back to these shepherds. As for you, O my flock, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, behold, I judge between sheep and sheep, the rams and the he-goats. I think that means that here, that he already said that these kings fatten themselves and rulers fatten themselves on the price of the sheep. Now God said, I'm going to judge between them. I'm going to judge between the individuals. I'll be the judge. I'll judge between the individuals who will live and who will be destroyed. Seemeth it a small thing unto you to have fed upon the good pasture, but now he's talking to the rulers now, but you must tread down with your feet the residue of your pasture. Not only did you eat the best out of yourself, but you trod it down and tread it down to where nobody else had anything. You did not only want it all yourself, you didn't want others to have anything. Well, it looks like that sometimes. That's the way people when getting high places, well, not only in government, but in business, they're cheating. We sold all those fake stocks here, and raked over millions of dollars there of these people who suffered into buying them. Well, that kind of fellow needs to be judged and executed in the right way, whatever it might be, whatever it could be. And to have drunk, it wasn't enough for you to drink of the pure waters, but you must foul the residue of your feet. You trample down the pasture while the others couldn't get anything. Now you went and drank the pure water, and then you stirred up the mud there with your feet there, but it wasn't fit for anybody else. Pretty serious charge, isn't it? But not only did you get it all for yourself, but you couldn't, but in your conduct and action there, nobody else had anything. And as for my sheep, they eat that which you have trodden with your feet, and they drink that which you have fouled with your feet. So there's all, of course, a figurative speech here of people as sheep, and the kings as shepherds, and the way that they had acted in the feeding of them and looking after them there. They only looked after themselves. But what the real point of this all is, you didn't look after anybody but yourself. I know we've had some good men in Congress and President, I know that. But it looks to me like the most of them get in, begin to look for themselves. Those Abscam folks up here in Phoenix got in. Now, who were they looking after? They weren't looking after the folks down here in Tucson and out there in Yuma. They were looking after number one there, get where they could get out of it. I think every one of them already turned out to pasture and fine or put in jail the rest of their life or something there, rather than just tap him on the wrist and put him back in office or put him out and make him get out for a month on pay. To me, that'd be great. I'm here and they're going to kick me out for a month and going to pay me while I'm gone. I can take a good vacation. That's what they're doing to some of those guys. Have you noticed that? Now, if the Congress had, if I had to turn them out for a few weeks and on pay, and down here and everywhere, well, their mom said, crazy. They're one of the craziest people, the best people on earth, the American people, the craziest in some way. They can do some of the craziest things politically that you ever saw in your life sometime. Oh, let's move on. But what I'm trying to see in God's dealing with those nations and kingdoms back yonder, how well that fits right into our situation today. Moving on. Therefore, thus saith the Lord Jehovah unto them, behold, I, even I, will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. That's the one that got fat and the one that didn't get anything. Because you thrust with side and with shoulder, push all the disease with your horns, till you have scattered them abroad. Therefore will I save my flock, and they shall no more be a prey, and I will judge between sheep and sheep. And I will set up, now he looks beyond the time, and he will bring them back, and what he will do, he looks on beyond that to the coming of the Messiah. Now notice this. And I will set up one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them, even my servant David. Very similar to what you remember is Jeremiah said, 23rd chapter, set him up. My servant David, he shall feed them, and he shall be their shepherd. And I, Jehovah, will be their God. And my servant David, prince among them, I, Jehovah, have spoken it. All right, so here then, God, you're going to be their God, this David will be their prince. And we use the word prince there, I think in the sense that he is second to God. That in the Godhead, there is God the Father, and then Jesus Christ the Son, and the Holy Spirit there, the revealer of things. And so, I think when he said he'll be the prince, so actually he's ruling for Jehovah. Jehovah has never abdicated the throne. What he has done is appoint Jesus Christ to be the King of kings and Lord of lords. But Jesus will deliver the kingdom back unto God the Father when he comes back, 1 Corinthians 15. Then cometh the end, when he shall deliver up the kingdom to God the Father. He himself will become subject to the Father. God may be all in all. Now, that's a passage. That's all I know about it. I don't know of another passage that indicates that. But Paul said that with regard to the second coming out by the Holy Spirit, so I know it's so. All right, now let's move on. So here then is what this David is coming. And I will make with them a covenant of peace, and will cause evil beasts to cease out of the land, and they shall dwell securely in the wilderness and sleep in the wood. Now, he's talking now not about something literal in Jerusalem or in Palestine. He's talking now about what's going to be in this new order under Christ. Christ will be the shepherd and king. Now that God will look after us, and no more will be carried into any kind of a captivity unless we are willing to be carried into the devil's captivity. Just as long as a person wants to serve God and does it right, there's not a force on earth. The devil with all of his force can't take that individual away from the Lord. Well, I can leave. I can quit. I can turn my back on God. I can do that. When Jesus said, that no man takes away from me and no man takes away from the Father. I've talked about that, you remember the 10th chapter there, when Jesus made that statement. So here then, I'm protected by Christ and over all it was by God, but I can leave. I can change. I can turn away. And so I think that's the point that is taught there. But now notice here, when he says here, I make a covenant of peace with it. Turn with me to the 13th chapter of the book of Hebrews there, and note toward the close of this great book what he said in about verse 20 there, 20 and 21. All right. Now the God of peace, who brought again from the dead the great shepherd of the sheep, that's Christ, you see, with the blood of an eternal covenant, even our Lord Jesus, make you perfect in every good thing to do his will, working in us that which is well pleasing in his sight, through Jesus Christ, to him be the glory forever and ever. Now here then is the God of peace, and here the great shepherd of the sheep, that's Jesus, we'll talk about back here, and here is an eternal covenant. I make a covenant with you. For God has now made a new covenant. Those of us who enter into that covenant, now in covenant relationship with him, he's the shepherd, we're a sheep in the flock here of that, and now then we're protected by God under that covenant. So I may suffer physically, but nobody can take me away from the Lord spiritually. That's what he's talking about. You're not talking about physical anymore now in this passage here. So it's a spiritual thing now. We'll move on from that. Now he says further, naturally showers of blessing. We sing a song sometime. That shall be showers of blessing came from this very passage right here. And I will make with them I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing, and I will cause the shower to come down in a season. There shall be showers of blessing, and the tree of the field shall yield its fruit, and the earth shall yield its increase, and they shall be secure in their land. Now what is that land? That land is the new spiritual Israel, Isaiah the second chapter, the mountain of Jehovah. Behold, in the latter days, come to pass in the latter days, that the mountain of Jehovah shall be established on the top of the mountains and exalted above the hills there, and all nations shall flow unto it. So, our spiritual Zion, Hebrews 12, you've come unto Mount Zion. So, our land is the spiritual kingdom of God on the spiritual mountain of Mount Zion under which we've come. Now, that's spiritual. Now, remember, make a distinction. When the Bible is talking about the physical, bring him back to the physical land. He did that. He's done that already. Now he's talking about the spiritual and the protection and the threat in the spiritual, which will be completely different from the other. Now, isn't it amazing how that the prophets were so able to foretell all these things? And you turn to the New Testament, and here Jesus Christ came and fulfilled them. And today, we're heirs of all that God planned and purposed back on. Wonderful. Now, notice further, and they shall know that I am Jehovah when I have broken the bars of their yoke and have delivered them out of the hand of those that made bondmen of them. And both our both true of Israel, back yonder, God broke the rod there when he put this yoke over an animal, put a rod through that, a hold it there, sometime there. And I think later on they made that difference, but at that time it was a rod through there. God will break that rod and deliver them from the yoke. Well, today, what's the rod that holds us? What's the yoke? It's sin, isn't it? God breaks the yoke of sin and delivers us from its bondage. So, what was back yonder one thing, over in the new covenant, it's a spiritual matter. Right? And they shall no more be a prey to the nations, neither shall the beasts of the earth devour them, but they shall dwell securely, and none shall make them afraid. And I will raise up unto them a plantation or a planting there, a place to dwell, for renown, and they shall be no more consumed with famine in the land, neither bear the shame of the nations any more. I talk about a spiritual now, a spiritual kingdom, spiritual sheep in the spiritual kingdom, and not a physical thing. Christians may suffer physically. They may suffer along with others in famines and all that. That's not what he's talking about now. He's now talking about a spiritual relationship, a spiritual provision, and God will look after that. And I think one of the mistakes that so many preachers make today is they want to confuse the two there, and they forget the spiritual, and they talk about how many material blessings you get from serving God. I think God takes care of his own heart. I think that's true. But that's not what God promises. He promises the spiritual wealth of heaven as a Christian. And they shall know that I, Jehovah, their God, am with them, and that they, the house of Israel, are my people, saith the Lord Jehovah. And ye, my sheep, the sheep of my pasture. And then my sheep here, you see, he's talking about the spiritual sheep. So 12 times there, he was referring to the Israel, the nation, as his sheep. And only one time does he refer to his spiritual people as his sheep. My sheep, the sheep of my pasture, are men, and I am your God, saith the Lord Jehovah. To me, that's a rich chapter. A rich chapter. Here he goes back and shows the total and utter and complete failure of the kings of Israel and Judah, how that politically they failed. I'm convinced that every political system that God uses them, yes, that was the point of last Sunday, or every power, the power ordained of God. God ordained a form of civil government. We decide the form of it. I'm convinced that in every civil government, there is a seed of its own destruction. What is that? Human nature. A human institution. A human thing. A human document. And all things that are human will ultimately pass away. It's only the spiritual that's going to endure forever. And God has ordained the spiritual in Christ. And I think that every political government, now I started off one of the greatest in the world. My sister Scoot was telling me about their visit back to Washington a few weeks ago. And you went back in that country, then all those old documents, all that, they were acknowledging God. Here's what God is, a nation under God. And if God permitted, and they looked to God back there when this nation was established, and it prospered. It grew to be the greatest in the world. But what happened today? They want to rule God out of every single thing. You can't pray, you can't read the Bible anymore, and the programs are blasphemous. They blaspheme God in their programs over the air and everything else, and God has ruled out what's going to happen. Decay and destruction. God's still in control. Don't ever forget that. And so this nation is doomed to fall just like all the rest of them, because the human element took over and ruled the divine oversight out of it. Now, that can never happen impossible. Well, I wanted to get the next chapter, but now, so we'll just leave it right there. I don't think I have any time to talk about it. Maybe you got a question you want to ask. I've done all the talking. Maybe you want to say something. But we'll add anything to what I've said. Although he's talking about the rulers in Israel, yet when we come to Jesus Christ in the New Testament, we read in Revelation 1 and verse 4, and from Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness, the firstborn from the dead, and the ruler of the kings of the earth. He's the ruler of the kings of the earth, just as God was back there. Then you come to Revelation 12 and verse 5, and here was this son caught up under God in his throne, and he shall rule all the nations with a rod of iron. Revelation 17 and 14, and these, that is the political nations, shall make war against him, and he shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings. They that are with him shall overcome, called and chosen and faithful. Revelation 19 and verses about 15 to 16. Here you see Jesus treading the winepress of the wrath of God the Almighty. Against what? Against the nations. He put the nations in his winepress, and he treads them as you tread grapes in a winepress. Who's that? Christ. Christ is ruling in the kingdoms of men today, just as God did in ancient times. Now, God was ruling over those kings back there, all of them. He brought them to an end when Daniel points that out. I thought you were going to study Daniel when we get through with this, and go to parallel to this. But at any rate, here then, God ruled among the kings. Like Jesus now is doing it now. But those were his shepherds. And what I was going to say was, therefore, I believe every ruler, every president, every king, every dictator, whatever he is, if they're in a position, he's answerable to God with conduct. But Jesus is the ruler of the kings of the earth. Therefore, they're answerable to him. And when they reject God and the principles of right for what they will put in, then Christ with a rod of iron, as he's using that figure there, abusing his armies or what it might be, to destroy that kingdom. And so he rules in the kingdom of men with a rod of iron. He rules in the spiritual kingdom with a scepter of uprightness. Hebrews 1:8-9. But he is the supreme ruler anyway, wherever you look at it. So when I look at all this, how that make you feel? Well, it makes me feel good. It makes me realize that our nation and the world is not in the hands of Hussein, who will be on or that other fellow either, or President Bush, or the fellows in Russia, not in their hand. Finally, it's in the hand of God. He's the supreme ruler, ruling through Christ.